Thank you for the very nice introduction. And thanks a lot for hosting me at Pyramid Institute. I really enjoyed my visit so far. Yeah, in this talk, I would like to share with you the results of our projects on early dark energy using the profile likelihood. And before I talk about the profile likelihood, I would like to give a brief introduction about the idea behind early dark energy. As you probably know, early dark energy is a proposed solution to the Hubble tension. And in the second part, we'll discuss the question whether early dark energy does indeed solve the Hubble tension. Because as you will see, there's some disagreement about this question in the literature. And in order to understand this disagreement better, we constructed a new constraint using the profile likelihood. So early dark energy is the proposed solution to the so-called Hubble tension. And the Hubble tension is a discrepancy between different measurements of the current expansion rate of the universe. And in particular, the tension is most severe between two experiments. And one of them is the Planck CMB measurement, which uses the temperature fluctuations of the CMB in order to constrain the composition of the universe at very early times. And then one needs to assume a cosmologic model, usually flat lambda CDM, in order to predict the expansion rate of the universe today. And on the other hand side, there's a measurement by the Schuss collaboration, which uses type 1a supernovae. These supernovae are standardizable candles, and they, in this experiment, they use Cepheid variable stars in order to calibrate these supernovae, and then they can plot essentially the Hubble diagram and read off the Hubble constant as the slope of this line. And taking into account the most recent Schuss result, one ends up with a 5-sigma tension with the Planck CMB measurement. But the interesting part about the Hubble tension is that it's not only a tension between two experiments, but between two classes of experiments. On the one hand side, the direct measurements, which do not or only weakly depend on a cosmological model, like the Schuss measurement. And on the other hand side, the indirect measurements, which need to assume a cosmological model. And this is usually flat lambda CDM, for example, the Planck CMB measurement, or also measurements using Big Bang nuclear synthesis and BAO. Now, the big question is whether this tension is caused by systematics or by new physics, and this is still an open question. But in this talk, we will simply ignore about the systematics and ask the question, what kind of new physics could cause this tension? There are many, many ideas to solve the Hubble tension, but one can group them in two classes. And in order to understand these two classes, it's instructive to look at this quantity, theta s, the angular size of the sound horizon. And this quantity is very well measured by Planck, and it's given by the frequency of the acoustic peaks. And theta s can be computed by the physical size of the sound horizon divided by the angular diameter distance. Now, early time solutions modify Rs, which is given by an integral from the Big Bang to the redshift of recombination. And recombination is when the CMB is sent out. And late time solutions, on the other hand side, they modify this integral from today until the redshift of recombination. So they modify the angular diameter distance. And there have been many studies that try to assess which type of solution works better. And it turns out that the early time solutions work better. One of those studies is, for example, the H0 Olympics paper, where they gave medals to the best performing solutions to the Hubble tension. And you can see early dark energy here, which has 3 extra parameters, and it got a silver medal. And only time-varying electron mass or time-varying electron mass plus curvature performed considerably better. However, this is very difficult to motivate from a particle physics perspective. The underlying reason for this is that we have a lot of tomographic data from the redshift today to the redshift of recombination, and it's very hard to modify the expansion rate there enough in order to solve the Hubble tension. So the idea behind early dark energy is to introduce an additional dark energy-like component in the early universe, which boosts the expansion rate in the early universe. So age of set is increased. That means this whole integral is suppressed. And with that, one gets a smaller physical size of the sound horizon. Now, we said before that theta s is essentially fixed by the Planck measurement. So if theta s is fixed and Rs decreases, also dA has to decrease. And if one looks at age of set at late times and assumes that the matter content is similar to lambda CDM, the easiest to incorporate that is to increase H naught, and this is what is needed to solve the Hubble tension. So more precisely, early dark energy needs to start becoming relevant just before recombination. This is because this integral is most sensitive to redshifts just before recombination. It behaves like dark energy at early times in order to boost the expansion rate enough. And its energy density needs to dilute faster than matter after the redshift of recombination in order to not influence late-time physics and the CMB too much. So how could one realize such a rapid energy injection? The easiest is to introduce an additional scalar field phi. And there are many ideas what kind of potential phi could have, but the canonical ED potential is this 1 minus cosine potential to the power of n. And this field has four free parameters: the mass, the decay constant, the initial value, and the index n. Now, it has been shown that one needs n larger or equal than 3, because otherwise the field doesn't decay quickly enough, and it would influence late-time physics too much. So it became common to fix n to 3, and we will also do this in our project later, that I describe later. So this 1 minus cosine potential is actually inspired by the axion. However, for an axion, one would expect n equals 1. But yeah, this doesn't decay quickly enough, so one picked here n equals 3. So this is an axion-like field with an extremely small mass of 10 to the minus 27 electron volt. Let's have a look at the dynamics of the field. So initially, Hubble friction dominates, and the field is essentially frozen in its initial position. And in that phase, it behaves like dark energy, very similar to the inflaton field, actually. However, this is much at much later times than the inflaton field. So phi is not the inflaton here. At some critical redshift, yes?
Yeah, sorry. So normally, so that's like a slow roll condition, right? Mm-hmm. But normally, that's when you're dealing with the scalar field dominating the dynamics, the gravitational mm-hmm. dynamics.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, here I'm still confused, you know, is this early dark energy where it dominates the gravitational dynamics or where it's subdominant but driving some extra expansion? Which
is- Yeah, this is subdominant. So the fraction of early dark energy is about 10%. Of the total energy density.
So why should I believe that it still behaves like a slow roll inflaton?
I mean, in this very simple example, if one looks at the Klein-Gordon equation, it's just the dynamics that comes out. I mean, it's not coupled to the rest of the matter in any way. So this is just how it behaves on its own.
Normally, your slow roll conditions don't just rely on the equation of motion of the scalar, but they have the gravitational, you know, cosmological equations as well, and it's like they could, you know, I mean, sorry, I'm maybe. I mean, not part of the slow roll conditions are the fact that the expansion of the universe is also freezing, you know, keeping the field from falling, right? But if the expansion of the universe is dominated by radiation, it's just not as obvious to me that, mm-hmm. that this will be sustained.
Right. So I think this system is much easier than inflation, because if you just look at this one equation and you say in the beginning the Hubble friction term dominates, so you forget about the last term, and then you just solve this equation, the phi dot dot equals minus 3 phi dot, you will essentially find that it's kind of constant.
Yeah, but part of that with inflation is the fact that the inflaton is driving a very rapid expansion, mm-hmm. and so that kind of maintains friction domination. And I guess I'm just asking, mm-hmm. why does this maintain friction domination?
So it doesn't maintain it. As soon as this term becomes larger, it rolls down the potential and oscillates and decays away quickly. So the phase where this is important is super short, actually.
Oh, okay. Right.
Okay. But yeah, it's not like you want to maintain this over many eons. Okay. So yeah, after you have this very short domination, yeah, the mass term dominates, the field rolls down, and then one can show that the field decays away faster than matter. So the equation of state of this field is essentially minus 1 for redshifts before this critical redshift, and if we fix n to 3, it's 1/2 for redshifts after this critical redshift. And this is what the time evolution looks like. So it's a very rapid increase, then it starts oscillating and decays. And this is here's recombination, so it's already almost gone around recombination. And one from this more particle physics parameters, the mass and the decay constant and the initial value, one can compute the phenomenological parameters, the fraction of early dark energy, the critical redshift at which EDE peaks, and one keeps the initial value of the field. So this model has three additional parameters compared to Lambda CDM. So in order to solve the tension, one usually aims for about 10% of early dark energy at its maximum. So now, how does this model fare when compared to data? And can early dark energy actually solve the Hubble tension? And more importantly, can it solve the Hubble tension and simultaneously fit all available data sets? So if one considers the following data sets, the answer is yes. So if one takes into account CMB, then galaxy clustering measurements from BOSS with a baryonic acoustic oscillation scale and the redshift space distortion, and the Cepheid calibrated type 1a supernovae. And what happens is that Lambda CDM gives you this very low H0. When you instead analyze the CMB data and these data sets with the EDE model, H0 shifts to higher value, the error bar increases, and one alleviates the tension with SHOES, which is this gray line. And one finds about that the data prefers about 11% of early dark energy at its maximum and this rather high H0. However, one cannot simply introduce early dark energy and only H0 goes up, but there are some side effects to this. So also other parameters shift, because early dark energy acts at this as this dark energy component in the early universe, and therefore it suppresses the growth of perturbations at early times. And in order to compensate the suppressed growth, one needs more cold dark matter and a higher spectral index of the initial power spectrum. And as a consequence, at late times, the amplitude of matter clustering, also parameterized by S8 or by sigma 8, increases. And this worsens the already existing so-called sigma 8 discrepancy. One can also directly see the enhancement of clustering here at this, in this plot where we plot the analytic prediction for the galaxy power spectrum. The black is the Lambda CDM, and the red is the EDE model. And one sees here a small enhancement of clustering at small scales. This is also where sigma 8 is sensitive to, so this is why sigma 8 increases. Now, in order to probe this enhanced clustering in this analysis, the authors decided to include data from weak lensing experiments, from the dark energy survey, from KITS, and from HSC, in order to directly probe this worsening of the S8 tension. And when you look here at the right posterior, the blue line is including all data sets. However, or all data sets without weak lensing. But if you include weak lensing, essentially the amount of early dark energy decreases and decreases. And if one includes all data sets, but not the SHOES direct measurement, one finds this very tight upper limit, which is this teal line. So one finds that FED is constrained to be smaller than 6%. Remember that we wanted about 10% to solve the Hubble tension. And as expected, this gives a very low H0. Also, if you look at the red line, this is if one looks at Planck-only data. So the conclusion here is if one doesn't include SHOES in the data, in the data analysis, there's no preference for early dark energy. And if one includes additionally the weak lensing data, the constraint becomes even stricter. Similarly, if one looks at the full shape of galaxy clustering based on the effective field theory of large gas structure, the two groups here found a very similar picture, very tight constraint on the fraction of early dark energy, very low H0. And they find that early dark energy, or the conclusion of these two papers essentially, is that early dark energy cannot restore cosmological concordance. However, not everybody agreed with these results. And there were many authors pointed out that prior volume effects could bias the results of the EDE model. So what are prior volume effects? Prior volume effects are also known as just prior effects or projection effects or marginalization effects. And they appear if the posterior is strongly influenced by the prior volume. And this happens if the model has too many parameters, or equivalently, if the data is not constraining enough for all of these parameters. And also if the posterior is very non-Gaussian. And if one looks at the 2D posterior of the critical redshift and the initial value of the EDE field, one sees that the data cannot constrain those two parameters very well. And additionally, the parameter structure of the model can generate large volume differences. And the early Dark Energy model is actually an extreme case of this, because if the fraction of early Dark Energy goes to zero, so no early Dark Energy, the two other parameters that describe the EDE model more closely, so the critical redshift and the initial value, are completely unconstrained. Because if there's no early Dark Energy, it doesn't matter when it peaks. So one essentially recovers the lambda CDM limit, however, lambda CDM with two additional dimensions. And if one integrates out these dimensions, so if one marginalizes out these dimensions, this can lead to preference for small values of early dark energy. This bias only happens in the marginalized posterior. So if one would look at the full n-dimensional posterior, there wouldn't be a problem, essentially. But marginalizing over these unconstrained parameters gives the preference for smaller values of early dark energy. And one example from the literature where prior volume effects are important is this one. So I picked an example from a DAS collaboration paper where they wanted to check different modeling choices on simulated data, simulated lambda CDM data. And the two choices they wanted to check was if one marginalizes over the energy density in neutrinos or if one fixes the energy density in neutrinos. And they plot here the 2D posterior of both choices. And this dashed line shows the true value assumed in the simulation. And one sees that if one marginalizes over omega nu, one finds a slight bias in the posterior in the omega m S8 plane. And the interpretation of this is that omega nu is poorly constrained by this data set. And therefore, this shift in the 2D posterior can be explained by a projection effect from marginalizing over an under-constrained parameter that is correlated with the parameters shown. So even though we're not plotting omega nu, because omega nu is correlated with these parameters, one finds this small bias. And the decision here was essentially, so if the data cannot constrain omega nu anyway, we just fix omega nu in the baseline analysis.
That's not what they did.
Omega nu is varied in the baseline analysis. Okay. Oh, thank you. But actually, in the paper, they kind of, maybe it's different papers where they try different things. Because I think there in the, there they kind of concluded that it's better to fix omega nu.
I don't know, but I know that the baseline analysis includes it.
Okay, yeah, I'm not super expert on dark energy survey analysis, but I just looked into this paper where they just tested this. But yeah, thank you for the comment.
Modeling validation was done with fixed neutrino mass to sort of tighten constraints and make it more strenuous tests, but baseline analysis.
Baseline is with omega. Okay, thank you for correcting that. Okay.
Can I ask about the previous thing you said? So, right, like, I guess you mentioned that these prior volume effects are, you know, important when the likelihood isn't distinguishing between these different parameters. But then you also then previously said that there's this five sigma.
Right.
Which would then say that the likelihood should be strongly favoring models. And so then how do I
reconcile those two statements? Yeah, and this is essentially exactly what happens. Like, for example, in this 2D posterior, if one includes shoes, which is essentially the blue, green, and the yellow, one finds preference for the EDE, or one finds non-zero EDE fraction. But if one does not include shoes, one finds this tight upper limit. So yeah, also there have been like some arguments in the literature that shoes fixes the prior volume effect. which is kind of true because it gives you a strong preference for the EDU model and you get out of the FEDU of zero area. But then it's also tricky because you don't want to combine two datasets which are in tension before. So that's why.
That's yeah. The question here. Are you, what is the value of the H-hop constraint without shoes? Is that sufficiently consistent with shoes to be combining them?
No, it's not. That's the issue, yeah. Yeah, if you essentially analyze the EDE model with these datasets without shoes, it's you still end up with that 4 to 5 sigma tension. Yeah. Right. Okay, so I think I was here. So one idea to mitigate the prior volume effects would be to simply fix the two parameters that are not constrained by the data. And this is what was done here. So they fixed CC and CDI to the best fit value obtained to Planck only. And this is what they call the one parameter model. And when analyzing the same data set that before ruled out the early dark energy model, here with their reduced MCMC analysis, they find that the same data set prefers about 7% of early dark energy. So they were using exactly the same data set. They came to different conclusions than the studies before. And they suspect that prior volume effects are the reason behind this disagreement. However, this can also not be the final answer because it's not a full Bayesian analysis to simply fix two parameters to their best fit values and then take the same data set and constrain essentially the remaining parameters because it's some kind of double counting. And we're also not sure how the inferred amount of early dark energy depends on actually the choice of these fixed parameters. So our idea was to use a profile likelihood analysis, which is a method from frequentist statistics and which is not subject to prior volume effects. However, to be complete in this small review about early dark energy, I also want to mention the results from the Atacama Cosmology Telescope, because curiously, the Atacama Cosmology Telescope actually prefers early dark energy model over lambda CDM by 2 to 3 sigma. And this you can see in this posterior here. So red is the Planck result. The solid is lambda CDM. The dashed is the EDE model. And when analyzing Planck with the EDE model, there you cannot really resolve the Hubble tension. But for the ACT dataset, which is the blue contour, one sees that introducing early dark energy actually gives you very high H naught, and which is perfectly consistent with the shoes, which is here the gray shaded area. And they were trying to understand where this preference comes from, and apparently it comes from the TE and EE polarization power spectra, although from very large scales, which are apparently more influenced by possible systematics. So yeah, there are also claims that this might be due to systematics, but it's still an open question where this comes from essentially. So to summarize the status of EDE until now, so when including shoes in a full MCMC analysis, one finds that EDE solves double tension. If one includes only CMB data or combines CMB with galaxy clustering or weak lensing, in a full MCMC analysis, one finds that EDE is ruled out. However, if one analyzes the same data set with this reduced one parameter MCMC, one finds that EDE solves the tension. And then finally, the Atacama Cosmology Telescope prefers EDE and says EDE can solve the Hubble tension. And we were very confused and very curious to understand more how, from the same data set, different people can come to exactly opposing conclusions. So we wanted to check for prior volume effects using this profile likelihood method. So what is the profile likelihood? The profile likelihood is a method from frequentist statistics, and it's used to construct confidence intervals. And one constructs the profile likelihood by fixing the parameter of interest, which is called y here, to different values, and then minimizing the chi-squared or maximizing the likelihood with respect to all other parameters. So in the case of early dark energy, we, for example, fix the fraction of early dark energy to different values. And then we minimize over all other EDE parameters, lambda CDM, and the nuisance parameters. And for a Gaussian distribution, this gives a parabola, for example. And now one can construct or simply read off the one sigma confidence interval by looking for the intersection of the profile likelihood with the delta chi square equals 1. So this would be the one sigma confidence interval. And this is known as the Neyman construction. However, at a physical boundary, the construction becomes a little bit more complicated. And if you're interested, I can also talk about that a little more at the end. So why would it be interesting to look at a profile likelihood analysis if one already has an MCMC? And for that, I have a small comparison here. So the MCMC is based on the Bayes theorem, which states that the posterior is proportional to the likelihood times the prior. So by construction, the MCMC identifies bulk volumes that fit the data well. On the other hand side, the profile likelihood is a much simpler quantity. It's based only on the likelihood or on the chi-square. So there's no posterior and no prior. Both methods have different problems. So the MCMC, as we said, it can be subject to prior volume effects if the data is not constraining enough. But on the other hand side, the profile likelihood can have actually the exactly opposite problem. It can prefer a cosmology with very small parameter volumes, so with very finely tuned parameters. And one could solve those problems, for example, by considering more data or better data, or equivalently less free parameters of the model if the data doesn't constrain the model well enough. And on the other hand side, one can mitigate fine-tuning by, for example, constructing a physically well-motivated model. However, for the EDE model, all of these solutions are absent at the moment. So one can use both methods as complementary tools in order to mitigate the problems of both. And in particular, one can use the profile likelihood in order to verify the results from the MCMC. And one example where this has been done is this Planck 2013 paper, where they actually verified all the results from the MCMC with a profile likelihood analysis. And they actually find perfectly identical results for all lambda CDM parameters. But coming back to early dark energy, now we want to compute a profile likelihood in the fraction of early dark energy and in H naught. So the first step is we maximize the likelihood for FED fixed or H naught fixed, respectively, to different values. Then we fit a parabola to the profile likelihood. And then we construct a confidence interval using the Feldman-Cousins prescription. Or
you're varying the other EDE parameters, but also like the CDM parameters. In Planck, there's a bunch of internal nuisance parameters too, right?
In Planck, yeah, there's a lot of nuisance parameters, like around 40.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're varying those as well.
Yeah, as well. Yeah, there's actually in total there's a lot of nuisance parameters because we decided to use this EFT approach, which essentially introduces 8 nuisance parameters for every of the 4 BOSS data sets. We also have 4 × 8 plus the 4 different Planck. Right, so for the first step, for the minimization, we use a method that's known as simulated annealing, which is similar to what was used in Schöneberg et al. And Hannestad. And for the simulated annealing method, we run several small MCMC chains with successively decreasing step size and successively enhanced sensitivity to the likelihood difference, which is equivalent to decreasing the temperature of the MCMC chain. So we modified the Metropolis-Hastings algorithm a little bit by such that the acceptance probability is not only given by the likelihood difference, but it can be tuned by this factor F. And by increasing F from chain to chain, one can decrease the temperature. And for modeling the power spectrum, we use an extension of class known as class PT-EDE. And we use the following data sets. We use the Planck 2018 with lensing, the BOSS DR12 based on the full shape analysis. Then we include the weak lensing data from DES by including a Gaussian likelihood on S8. And we include the Schuh's direct measurement by a Gaussian likelihood on H0. Yeah, now, as I already said, we use this effective field theory approach to model the galaxy power spectrum. And the underlying idea is essentially we don't only want to use the BAO scale and the information from redshift space distortion, but we want to use the full shape essentially of the power spectrum. And in order to do that, one needs to model the power spectrum up to mildly nonlinear scales. And this can be done with this EFT approach. And it's based on perturbation theory. So the galaxy power spectrum multipoles essentially have this form. So it's the tree power spectrum, which is second order in density contrast, and the one loop, which is fourth order in density contrast. then some shot noise terms, and then these counter terms, which are essentially the hard piece of this EFT approach. And they are supposed to include the back reaction of the small scales onto the larger scales of the power spectrum. However, by using this EFT approach, one introduces a lot of nuisance parameters. So these include galaxy bias parameters and these counter terms and the shot noise. And also a small note for people who also use BOSS data. Here we included this updated BOSS window function treatment that was published by Beutler and McDonald, because there was a small bug in the window function before. And now to our results. So the first step we did was we ran a full MCMC analysis of our baseline data set, which is Planck plus BOSS full shape data. And we recover this very tight upper limit of FED smaller than 7% and a very low H0. And we also find that essentially the critical redshift and the initial value of the scatter field are not very well constrained. And one can also kind of see the prior volume effect that when FED goes to zero, the theta I here and the CC are essentially unconstrained. So now we run the profile likelihood analysis. And for the same data set that before gave this very tight upper limit, we find that the data prefers about 8 or 9% of early dark energy. And we did not only run profile likelihood in early dark or in FED, but also in H0. And we find an H0 of 70.6, which is consistent with Schuss at 1.4 sigma. And Schuss is this gray shaded area here. And for comparison, the orange shaded area is the Planck H0 measurement based on lambda CDM. However, we also recover that the SA intention is worsened slightly for the EDE cosmology. And in order to probe this worsening of the SA tension, we also include this prion S8 from the dark energy survey data. And as expected, the amount that is allowed by the data, the amount of early dark energy that's allowed by the data decreases slightly, and also H0 decreases slightly. However, even with including DES, the H0 is still consistent with Schuss at 1.6 sigma level. So as expected, including weak lensing reduces FED in H0, but it does not rule out early dark energy. And it seems like that in the case of the full MCMC, the prior volume effects seem to be the dominating effect compared to the enhancement of clustering at small scales. Now, you mean no, we haven't. You mean a profile likelihood in S8?
Yeah. I was curious if.
Yeah.
Like, I like the spot where Brian thought as a, you know, exploring the H0.
Yeah, I mean, what we have is kind of, we have the best fit cosmology for FED and H0 fix. So we kind of know where the best fit S8 is, and it's I show it here. So for this data set, the best fit S8 is actually 0.84. So it's higher than full lambda CDM. And compared to DES, it's higher. So you worsen the SA tension. So I don't think there's will anything surprising happen, because we know the best fit, so we could only determine essentially the error bar. Yeah. Okay, now because our baseline result on H0 was consistent with Schuss, we can actually combine with the Schuss direct measurement. And when combining this data set, we find this yellow line. As expected, very high fractions of early dark energy and a very high H0, which is perfectly consistent with the Schuss direct measurement. We were also interested how much of the constraining power comes from Planck alone. So we ran a profile likelihood in Planck alone. And we find that the results compared to Planck plus BOSS does not change much. And Planck alone result is also consistent with Schuss at the 1.7 sigma level. And we found it curious that actually our result using the profile likelihood and Planck only is perfectly consistent with what was found for the Atacama Cosmology Telescope data in the full MCMC analysis. So this is a pink shaded area here. So essentially, looking at the profile likelihood, we find no difference between those two experiments. And this plot summarizes all the profile likelihood constraints that we computed. So here the top four error bars are from the profile likelihood. And the bottom error bar is the MCMC result of our baseline data set. So we find that the profile likelihood results are all at consistently higher H-naught than the MCMC. And this is strong evidence for prior volume effects. And we find that the H-naught in the EDE model is within 1.7 sigma for all 1.7 sigma compared to the SHUS result for all data sets that we considered in our analysis, even when including galaxy clustering and weak lensing. So we actually find that early dark energy presents a viable solution to the Hubble tension and is not ruled out by large case structure. So far we have kind of asked the question, what if early dark energy is the true model of the universe? How much early dark energy would be preferred by the data and what H-naught would be preferred by the data? But we were also interested in looking at this problem more from a model selection point of view. So we wanted to know which model fits the data better when, or which model fits the data better from a model selection perspective, EDE or Lambda CDN. And one way to look at this is essentially to look at the goodness of fit, so just the chi-square. However, if one does that, there's essentially no penalty for extra parameters. So we decided that we wanted to look at this archaic information criterion, which is defined as the delta chi-squared plus 2 times the number of extra parameters in the extended model. And this penalizes extra parameters along the philosophy of Occam's razor. And for EDE, one has delta n of 3. So we computed this quantity for all of our data sets. So we computed the chi-squared and the archaic information criterion. And what we found is kind of intuitive. So we found that for all data sets that do not include the SHUS data set, we find a mild preference for Lambda CDM. But if we include SHUS into the data set, we find a clear preference for early dark energy. So essentially, every data set that does not include the Hubble tension prefers Lambda CDM, the simpler model. And if one includes the Hubble tension, EDE is preferred. However, even for the three first data sets, EDE presents a similarly good model as Lambda CDM, even when penalizing the extra parameters. So because I still have time, I would like to discuss a very short extra section. Because as I said, in ED cosmologies, the sigma 8 tension becomes worse. So we were looking for easy ways to compensate this worsening of the S8 tension. And there's a very natural candidate, essentially, which is the massive neutrinos. So as I said before, the higher the fraction of early dark energy, the stronger the enhancement of clustering at small scales. But also, it's well known that the higher the neutrino mass, the stronger the suppression of clustering at small scales. So here we wanted to ask the question, could a higher neutrino mass actually compensate the worsening of the S8 tension in ED cosmologies? So we're not even talking about solving the S8 tension, but just can we get back to the S8 tension level in Lambda CDM? And for that, we ran a profile likelihood analysis in the sum of neutrino masses with all EDE parameters free. And we find that the best fit neutrino mass, or sum of neutrino mass, is essentially 0.06, which is the minimum neutrino mass allowed by oscillation experiments. So this pink shaded area is ruled out by neutrino oscillations. So we find no preference for larger neutrino masses in EDE cosmologies. But indeed, we find a positive correlation between m nu and the fraction of early dark energy. So the higher we fix the sum of neutrino masses, the more early dark energy is actually preferred by the data. However, to reduce the S8 tension to the Lambda CDM limit, one would need a neutrino mass of 0.24. Because we have early dark energy, we still get a very high H0 to solve the Hubble tension. But the fit worsens by a delta chi squared of 7.5. So this solution is disfavored by the data. And when we looked at the BOSS galaxy clustering data set, we find actually that most of the constraining power didn't come from the full shape, but it came from the BAO scale. And so the overall answer is did not work to compensate the worsening of the S8 tension. So if the S8 tension persists, this is definitely a problem for early dark energy. And seems like that this requires an independent solution, probably a late time solution. Yes, and this brings me to my summary slide. So prior volume effects can be important for beyond lambda CDM models with many parameters. Here I discussed early dark energy, but this can also be important for decaying dark matter models. The profile likelihood is a method from frequentist statistics. And using this method, we found that early dark energy is a viable solution to the Hubble tension, and it's not ruled out by logical structure. The frequentist and Bayesian methods are actually complementary because both have different shortcomings, but using both together can mitigate the problems of both of them. So thank you for listening.
The ACT EDE constraints that you were showing, were those Bayesian constraints?
Yes. So the here in the shaded area.
Yeah, do you know if they are also affected by prior volume effects, such that profile likelihood might favor even higher FEDE?
I don't think so. Don't think so for the reason that if one looks just at the delta chi-squared for the ACT dataset, there's a really large improvement in delta chi-squared when looking at the EDE model. So I don't remember the exact number, but I think it's delta chi square of 10 or more or something like that. Yeah.
Can I ask one question?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, should it? Yeah, sure.
What happens to S8 attention if you do this analysis profile likelihood only for lambda CDM?
So we never ran a profile likelihood analysis only for lambda CDM. But I don't expect that something dramatic happens. We have one data point for lambda CDM, essentially, because if we run the minimization for FEDE equals zero, we essentially find the lambda CDM best fit, and we find exactly the same result that also is found in the MCMC. So I don't think that something dramatic happens there.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
I have the question about the analysis with massive neutrinos.
Okay.
If I understand correctly, the field degree because of the Planck data, right?
Yes.
What is your expectation if you will replace Planck data with ARC data, for example? Did you try to do it?
No, we didn't try. With massive neutrinos, yeah.
Yeah, because I think it might go away, actually. This,
right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be definitely interesting. Although it would also be hard to argue why we wouldn't include Planck data. It would be definitely an interesting problem to look at this again. But yeah, I think.
Yeah, I mean, just checking the robustness of your results with mm-hmm. respect to the difference in the data. And actually, I have the second question about the EFT framework, about theoretical framework.
Yes.
I noticed that you didn't include the higher order quantum parameter. Can you explain it just to simplify procedure of minimizing profile likelihood or? You need for something else.
Which higher order parameter?
Higher order parameter in counter terms.
In the counter terms?
Yes. Appears to be important for the Bose data.
The B tilde. So essentially, we just repeated the baseline analysis that was in this, I think, in this Chudaikin adult paper. And the Oliver Philcox paper.
No, baseline analysis on the Bose data actually includes this content term. That's why I'm wondering why you miss it. Parameter B, the order correction with respect to the content term.
Okay, I think.
So the gut effect appears to be important, so it's enhanced. So to properly capture fingers of the gut effect, you need up to the next, include next to the next to the leading order,
Right. So I need to double check. Maybe also this slide is not correct because we essentially repeated very similar analysis to the Hill et al. Paper. And if they included this counter term, then we probably also did. Do you know if they included the counter term?
No, I'm not sure. I'm just talking about the official Bose analysis with the mm-hmm. of process approach. They definitely influence parameters.
Okay, yeah, I need to double check, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, no?
Well, that gave me a little time to try and form what I was trying to say. So I think I'm also kind of curious about the difference between how this shows up in ACT versus Planck.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of thinking about like where the cosmological information is coming from. Do you have a sense of like when you vary your EDE parameters, like qualitatively, what does that look like on the CMB likelihoods? Are there certain like multipoles where this shows up?
You mean where the improvement in the fit comes from? So, I mean, I can show you a table. Maybe this helps. If we look, so this is for the baseline data set. And so including all the BOSS data sets and the Planck data sets. And it seems like the most improvement comes actually from the Planck high L for this data set. And intuitively, it's also very difficult for us to understand where the improvement actually from the BOSS full shape comes from, because also the different BOSS data set give either improvement or not. So it's very difficult to see where this comes from. So also, I actually don't really know where the improvement in high L comes from. But since we're introducing more parameter, intuitively, it would also be able to overfit the noise, essentially. Because we also saw with this archaic information criterion that actually adding the early dark energy model for Planck data alone or Planck plus BOSS is not preferred. So this could be also just overfitting noise.
Have you looked at it all like, the thing I know that is at high L and that the Planck likelihood that doesn't show up as much in ACT is this like excess lengthening smoothing that people use as AL parameter. And if this is raising S8, maybe that's there's something happening there. I don't know. That's not a good question. But have you looked at that at all?
So I haven't looked at ACT actually. We just found it curious that we find the same value, but yeah, sorry, I don't really know. But I also find it curious when you look at the ACT data, it seems to be in 7 bins, all at very large scale in the polarization data. So I think it's also not really understood why ED fits those 7 data sets so well. 7 bins. Yes?
So for the early dark energy model with the profile like are you considering a 3-parameter model here? So, you're looping over the early dark energy.
Mm-hmm.
Then are you treating the other 2 parameters as any other parameters?
Yes. Right. Yeah. They are for the minimization. All the EDE parameters are free and are varied the same way as the others.
Have you considered maybe doing like a 2D or 3D profile likelihood where you're over the other 2 parameters as well?
Yeah, we thought about that, but we found actually that for that is probably not very interesting because, for example, we plotted for the baseline data set. So for the baseline data set, if we fix or we have the best fit cosmology for different fixed values of the fraction of early dark energy, and then we look for the best fit initial value of the scalar field and critical redshift, and it's always the same value. So it seems like there's a preferred value for those 2 parameters. So I think if one would do a profile likelihood in them, I think it's still super interesting, but we didn't do it yet because it's quite expensive. And yeah, this is the only thing I can say about this question. Yeah.
Yeah, and I would probably say similar to one of the earlier comments. I think it might be interesting to look at lambda CDM as well. Maybe I don't know which parameter would be interesting. Maybe just H naught itself to the profile line.
Mm-hmm.
H where you're stepping from H naught, and just to see to which extent you have a tension. So if you have a 5-sigma over Bayesian analysis,
mm-hmm.
is it still a 5-sigma in a profile line?
Right. So. Yeah, it would be interesting to have a one-to-one comparison, but I think what I would expect is that there's not much difference because, yeah, essentially this was what was done in this 2013 paper where they did profile likelihood for all the parameters and they didn't find any not the slightest difference. So I think it's also because the distributions are very Gaussian, so you're kind of, yeah, you will recover the same with the frequentist approach. Yeah. Maybe if I can add one comment about the 2D profile likelihood for the decaying dark matter case that I didn't mention here, we did a 2D profile likelihood. And so it's doable, but yeah, it's a little bit more expensive.
There are a number of questions for Laura. Looks like